Okay, I'm Mona Sarfati, and I'm a faculty member at Thomas Jefferson University in the Department of Family and Community Medicine, and also in the School of Population Health there, which is a new school built on the MPH program, and a master's in health policy and quality and safety. And I just want to mention that I'm also chair of medical care section, and I want to put some brochures for our section up here on the table, and if anybody would like to take one before the end of the session, please come up and just take one. Okay, well, thank you all for being here today, and we have some very interesting experience to report on from Pennsylvania, which goes back several years now. There are a group of us who have participated in this Pennsylvania-wide activity together, and so our names are on this slide here. Okay, so I have no financial relationships to disclose. I'm going to talk a little bit first about our Department of Family and Community Medicine, and then a brief introduction to the Pennsylvania Chronic Care Initiative, then the process of practice redesign and reporting of measures that we've gone through, actually show you some of those reports, talk a little bit about the reimbursement support for this, and a little bit about the NCQA recognition process, and then give some examples of practice changes that were made as a result of this process. So Jefferson Family Medicine Associates is a teaching practice. We have 30 faculty members, 27 residents, 6 fellows, 5 nurse practitioners, 1 social worker, and about 35,000 patients and 80,000 patient visits. It's a very, very large practice. And you can see the array of insurers there, 40% HMO, about 27% Medicaid HMO, 12% PPO, and 10% Medicare. There's a wide range of socioeconomic groups represented in the practice. We've had advanced access scheduling for a number of years now. We have an EMR since beginning of 2008, and in January 2009, we were awarded a NCQA Level 3 patient-centered medical home status. So Governor Rendell in Pennsylvania established the Office of Healthcare Reform in 2003, aiming to ensure all Pennsylvanians and to try to generate more activity around chronic care reform, which is seen as a key to reduce the cost of healthcare and also improve the quality. And it was heavily noted that the current payment systems do little to reward practices for effective control of chronic disease. So why chronic disease? Well, increasing levels nationwide, increasing costs, not well cared for at the primary care level. We can go into more detail about this if anybody would like to. And then Pennsylvania specifically was one of the poorest states in terms of hospital admission rates, and specifically admission rates for asthma and for diabetes. So patients with primary care physicians have lower costs nationwide. But PCPs, primary care physicians, or primary care providers are declining in numbers, and this is seen in part attributable to low reimbursement, low satisfaction, and failure to attract new graduates into primary care. So the Pennsylvania Chronic Care Initiative, which started this out, there was a commission that was designated. They developed a strategic plan. It was based on the Wagner Chronic Care Model and patient-centered medical home. This is the slide, the model that you've already seen, which gives the chronic care model, the Wagner chronic care model. Many of you probably know that a major effort was made in the early 90s, supported by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, to bring together all the evidence on the chronic care model. So major conferences, major collection of evidence, and it was very strong. And so that has increased traction now over time because of that. So in Pennsylvania, in part because this was the governor's effort, he was able to bring the insurers to the table, and so we had Aetna, Independence Blue Cross, Keystone, Mercy, Health Partners, AmeriChoice, all the major payers in Pennsylvania came to the table and agreed to pay at an increased rate for practices that got NCQA certified and were willing to participate in the collaboratives. And collaborative meetings were held across the state. They encouraged use of chronic care model. There were practice teams that collaborated internally assisted patients to achieve self-management goals, measured outcomes on a monthly basis, and reported to the collaborative, all had to commit to have this improved access, open access scheduling, and we were heavily encouraged to use patient registries and all of the other pieces of the chronic care model. And so we met on a regular basis figure out how to implement those chronic care model pieces into our practices. We had two-day meetings over the first year. The second year, we had one-day meetings. At each one of those meetings, we were educated, and then we had breakout groups by practice or by topic so that people could get together and talk about how to implement these different pieces within the context of our own practices. We're encouraged to use the Plan, Do, Study, Act cycles, you know, rapid huddling and rapid cycle change, and all of those methods for encouraging change within the practice. Okay, and so the commission, the Chronic Care Commission, thought that it would be possible to improve quality within a year, reduce admissions and cost, and improve access, etc. So they had great hopes for this, and some of these have in fact come to fruition. And so I want to give you just some examples of some of the practice improvements that have been implemented as a result of this. In our practice, we instituted revised flow sheets for diabetes on the charts and enlisted the involvement of the medical assistants in getting that information at the time that the patient gets their vital signs when they check in, so the information would be available to the providers, you know, at the start of the visit. And so that was the expanded role of the medical technicians. They were also taught to do monofilament exams so that that foot exam would be done before the visit occurred. We instituted what we called soundbites. SEPA was Southeast Pennsylvania. We were the first collaborative group, and so we implemented these soundbites throughout the practice to help remind providers key information to deal with issues like clinical inertia, which was the sense that physicians would see people whose blood pressure wasn't under control but would be reluctant to increase their medications because, you know, they would maybe hear, I haven't taken my medicine yet this morning, and so they wouldn't know how to interpret the blood pressure, and so they wouldn't increase a dose as it should have been, or they were reluctant to start insulin and, you know, various things like that. There was just a certain amount of inertia to move forward as the guidelines recommended to get patients on guideline recommended care and to get to the goals, you know, not to be satisfied until we got to the guideline goals. We also implemented a group visit, so we had pilot sessions last spring, weekly sessions starting in July of last year. And so we have patients come every Friday morning. We have our group visit. People check in, they get vital signs, they get an update on what they have and haven't had according to the guidelines. We have an hour-long education session by an educator, and then we have what we call action planning, and typically there are a lot of people in the room. There are pharmacy students, we have a pharmacist, there are medical students, sometimes there are students from the eye hospital nearby. We have, you know, residents. There are a lot of people who are team that help out with these dish sessions. We tell all the patients at the beginning of the session, this is your team. This is your diabetes care team. It takes all of these members to provide care for you, and you are an important member of your team. You are arguably the most important member of your team. And then the last hour, we do self-management action planning, and everybody in the room is taught to do action planning. So everybody sits down with a patient and says, you know, what are you working on, and what's getting in your way, and how can you overcome what's getting in your way, and provides the patient that opportunity to talk out loud and think out loud and get a little, you know, feedback and reinforcement for whatever they're working on. That's really key. I've got a number of other, you know, best practice changes that came from the different groups. There's limited time, so let me just show some of the graphs. Since we've been reporting monthly, we have data now, and this data is not quite up to date, but we have improved, you know, in a number of metrics. And so you can see the lower left-hand corner there, those who are prescribed a statin, you know, that's increased greatly. Those who are on an ACE or an ARB, which helps to protect kidney function, that's an angiotensin converting, a blocker. Agent, and those do protect kidney function, and so many more patients are on those. And, you know, you can see some of the other things that have gone up, those percentage with foot exams over there on the lower right and so forth. So we have come a long way, and we have much further to go. This, just leave you with this one slide. This actually shows in the blue the 90th percentile for practices in New England and the 90th percentile for those participating in the collaboratives in Pennsylvania, and then the national average is in green, and the Pennsylvania average non-collaborative is in purple. And you can see that, you know, the red there, the red is, the upper is better, and that we have actually made a lot of progress by doing this. And so, you know, our metrics have come up statewide, and that's what we were trying to do. So thank you very much. Thank you.